Hello, boys and girls of Credit Union Land, and welcome to episode 76 of the CU Insight Experience. This episode is brought to you by our friends at PSCU. As the nation's premier payments CUSO, PSCU proudly supports the success of more than 1,500 credit unions. My name is Randy Smith. I'm one of the co-founders of CUinsight.com, and it is my job on the show to have conversations with the best and the brightest of the credit union community. I get to pick their brains and see if we can't find a few nuggets that we can all learn from. My guest on today's show is James Skank. James is the president and CEO of PenFed. I knew this conversation was going to be a ton of fun. James has a lot to share. I've been reading his writing in Forbes on leadership and knew he was the perfect guest for the show. And I will tell you, it did not disappoint. We talked about how the work that PenFed has been doing for over a decade prepared them for COVID-19. And quite honestly, it's probably got them pretty prepared for anything else that comes up too. We also talked about why it's important for credit unions to keep lending to Main Street, even as we see all these articles about the banks pulling away from, you know, quite honestly, individuals. And what an opportunity this is for all credit unions out there across the country, no matter the size. The leadership section of this show is just awesome. James shared with us those lessons he's learned over a lifetime, whether it was from his military background or being the CEO of one of the largest credit unions in the world, or what he's learned from mentors and even shared some life lessons that his dad passed along to him. So many nuggets that I think there's going to be quite a bit that all of us can take away from this one. As always, we wrap it up and have some fun with the rapid fire questions to end the show. I truly did enjoy this conversation. I think you will too. I look forward to being able to move about the country again and hope my path crosses with James again very, very soon and we can continue this conversation in person. So without further ado, I give you my conversation with Mr. James Skank. Enjoy. James, welcome to the show.
Randy, it's great to be here. Thanks for reaching out to PenFed and myself. I look forward to speaking with you today.
Oh, so have I. A couple different things. Obviously, we're all living through some interesting times, and I was looking forward to talking to you and all the work that you guys are doing at PenFed for your members and just, you know, credit unions as a whole. And then this morning, I noticed an article in one of the trades that you guys just passed 2 million members, was it? And donated $2 million?
We just passed 85 years in business.
Yeah.
2 million members and the 25 billion threshold. So we had a lot to celebrate in April.
Congratulations. That is fantastic. So let's just jump right into the questions here while everyone's listening. So a global pandemic, that's been a new one for most of us. You just mentioned the history of PenFed. How has that prepared you and your team for the current times that we're going through and, you know, when things are changing by the day?
We've been very fortunate at PenFed. So after 9/11, we learned it was never about going down and then coming back up. We needed to build an infrastructure that we call always on.
Yeah.
And so we built a strategic plan in 2001 that we would transform the business within a decade to be 95% remote and only 5% through brick and mortar. So what that looked like was 80% of our transactional business on March 1st of this year, so prior to COVID-19, 80% was done through a mobile phone application or the web.
Wow.
That was 80% of our transactional business. 15% through phone calls to our financial centers and only 5% in branches. So when COVID-19 hit, the only difference was we had our employees working from home, and in the branches where we had drive up, we went to drive up only.
Yeah.
So I hate to, it's almost sort of bad to say, but it was almost seamless because we spent a decade rehearsing. So we've had hurricanes and earthquakes in Puerto Rico where we had to have all our employees working from home. We've had Omaha blizzards and snowstorms. So we've gotten used to having 500 employees working from home, taking calls from our members. Eugene, Oregon has had different issues over time. San Antonio. So we built a regional distribution operation with several hundred employees in San Antonio, 500 plus in Omaha, 500 plus in Eugene. And everyone already had a notebook computer, access to VPN, secure access to the accounts, and wireless connectivity. So when we had to throw the switch in March, It was nothing that we haven't already been doing on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, I mean, did you, you mentioned some folks were still like working the drive-thrus. It sounds like you were, the majority of your crew was all just flip of the switch working from home.
95% of our employees were immediately working from home. I still go in with a few of my executives 3 days a week. The other 2 days we do through an online application, but I can bring all my executives. The last 3 months, we've done our board meetings virtually. We're going to do our first virtual annual meeting in PenFed's 85 years history. But we've been able to serve our 2 million members, and literally our volumes through April for the first 4 months of this year are up nearly 30% over 2019.
That's pretty awesome. I bet there's going to be a lot of people reaching out to other CEOs that want to hear about the first virtual annual meeting, because I know I've been on quite a few calls with the groups, and that seems to be a big one. Is that coming up right now? Is like, how do you still do the annual meeting, virtually? So,
Andy, we always learn from others, and I would be remiss to not give a lot of credit to my predecessor, Frank Pollock. Even though I've been a CEO for 6 years,
yeah.
Prior to that, Frank was a CEO for 14 years. And after 9/11, he took H1N1 seriously. He took avian flu seriously. March of this year, we had 5,000 surgical, HN95 masks already in inventory.
Wow.
We have MREs, water stocked up, safe rooms prepared. We have generators at our houses, so we always have real-time power if the grid goes down. We have a lot of infrastructure that was built based on Frank's leadership that I've been able to leverage off. My board of directors made huge IT investments over the last 6 years. But it was based on the framework and the vision of being a remote firm that he laid out literally 20 years ago.
That's fantastic. I'm sure we'll get more to that. And there's a couple other things that just popped into my head as well. But I wanted to make sure to mention back in April, you wrote an article for Forbes. And I thought it was fantastic. So very well done. If you could you share a few of those important hacks for leaders that you wrote about with our listeners? And I know we'll get more to this, but how much of that came from your military background?
Some came from my military background as far as it's always important, whether you're a squad leader, keeping your 12-person squad informed, if you're a platoon leader, keeping your 40-person unit informed, if you're a company commander, there's four squads, so you have 160 individuals you're keeping informed, if you're a battalion commander, you have three companies of 160 and so on. What most folks do, whether it's in finance or academia or across industries, if they have a meeting in a boardroom or an executive team room or with a management team, they think everybody was part of that conversation.
Right.
They weren't. It's absolutely essential that leaders communicate, communicate, communicate. What soldiers see in the military and what employees see in any firm is if their leaders are communicating with them, if they're being honest, if they're being transparent, if they're being forthcoming. And what I try to talk about in the article is when you have a lot of uncertainty, you might not know the answer. Don't pretend you know an answer to the employees if you don't.
Yep.
Explain to them you're studying it. You're looking into it. You'll get back to them. Share with them as much information as you know. It really came from a book I read called Team of Teams by Stanley McChrystal about 5 or 6 years ago, his time in combat, where he was able to organize literally thousands of operators, analysts, intel specialists, all real time by sharing information. He actually found that the power of collective information sharing would be able to usurp and operate faster than the enemy could react if you're willing to share. And so my job as a CEO is to always be encouraging all my division heads, my managers and employees to share, provide feedback mechanisms, not to be afraid to state their mind. The more communication you have in any firm, the better leadership you'll see in that firm.
I think you're the second person on the podcast to recommend that book. I'm thinking it might have been Tony Hernandez who also recommended that one. So, and I actually ordered it off Amazon after he was on. It's in the stack that I'm trying to get to. COVID hasn't been a slowdown at all. It seems like we're just doing more of this, video
the
and everything
biggest
else.
Takeaway is information empowers your employees. If you give your employees information, if you're honest with them, if you're transparent with them, they will follow you 110%.
So something, when you were speaking earlier about over the past decade, all the advancements that you made at PenFed, the question that I had for you that it seems you are just the perfect person to ask this to is, do you think this is going to change when you look at credit unions overall. It sounds like at PenFed, you've already kind of made this transition, but do you think this is going to change the way that members interact with credit unions? And as somebody who's doing 85% of their, you know, the business through the app and the website, any hacks you can share with others that are just moving to that?
I don't. In other words, you see so many prognosticators, maybe that's not the right word, but so many giving you what the future is going to look like. As an economist, I always say the best economist is a historian. I'll tell you 5 years from now how the trends went. But I see people already in South Carolina, in Florida, in other locations where I have some of my executives working from. People are back in restaurants. People are out on the beach. People are socializing. People are being careful. They're social distancing. They're not shaking hands as much. They're not flying as much. But people are still coming into PenFed branches. We have 60% of our branches don't have drive up. They're walk-in only.
Okay.
Our frontline ambassadors are seeing members every day. I mean, so some folks are going to continue to want to do business face to face. Remember, 99.X% of the population has not been impacted. It's less than 1%. Those who have been impacted, those who have recovered, people want to live their lives. So I don't think there's going to be, this is my one data point from what I'm seeing in South Carolina, Florida, and other states that have reopened. Americans love to interact. We are a social community. So credit unions that still have branches, I think they're going to do just fine. The good news is being a credit union is the great place to be because Americans trust credit unions. We saw between the downturn in 2007 and 2009, we went from the mid 80 million members. Since then, we're over 120 million members. People trust credit unions because we're there for our members through sunny days and rainy days, where banks have already proven they are not there for their retail consumers on rainy day. They're already drying up credit. They're making it very hard to refinance. They are making it very difficult because their business is really commercial lending. They want low-cost deposits from small businesses, and they want to lend it out commercially. The little guy, credit unions serve Main Street Americans, and that's why I'm so proud to be part of this industry.
That's something that I've heard you mention, that, you know, through this, credit unions still need to be making loans. And we've seen, I mean, there have been multiple articles here recently about that banks, like you just said, are drying, it's just drying it up. So how are you, whether it's through PenFed or if you look even broader again at the entire system, how can we take advantage of this moment in time?
Just doing what we do best is people helping people. So even under these times, let's remember, there's 130 million Americans still working.
Yep.
Right. 130 million still have jobs, car loans, credit cards, mortgages. They need to refinance their student loans. Now they actually have the time to shop around, find the best deal, and actually put themselves in a better financial position looking across their portfolio. And credit unions know their members as far as the character. A member that's been here for 20 years, we know their payment history. They may be having a tough time now. Credit unions are notorious for helping them with skip payments, doing loan workarounds, loan workouts, to be that financial institution of choice for the long run. And we're not wed to these quarterly financial results happening, you know, our stock price swing left and right. We can play the long game with our members. We can make sure we're there for them. And that's what really differentiated the credit union industry during the last downturn. And that's where it's not taking advantage. It's doing what we do best. It is absolutely being empathetic to someone that's out of a job, someone whose spouse has lost a job, finding payment terms that they can make over the next 4, 5, or 6 months. That's where we stand together as an industry.
Yeah, I am so with you there. Last question in this first section of the show. If we're to sit down a year from now, if you could break out that crystal ball, what are you most proud of that you and your team at PenFed have accomplished over the next year?
First, I'll relate to the PenFed Foundation. So PenFed had a foundation we've established in 2001 to help our core community. So it's almost 20 years old. We have truly stepped up and helping thousands of service members who are in financial hard times through our COVID-19 relief program. That relief program has made a real difference in the lives of Americans who needed it at this time. Secondly, we have not stopped giving philanthropically. PenFed's going to give away $2 million to celebrate our 2 million members this year. We gave away $50,000 the other day at local supermarkets to the elderly that were shopping by surprise. We gave them $100 gift cards, $50,000 worth. We have not stopped giving to the nonprofits and the community groups that we support each and every. They need us in the credit union industry now more than ever. It breaks my heart when I see some news stories about these nonprofits whose their long-term donors and supporters are actually pulling back. I encourage all of my 2,700 employees, you know, we're all, we have a job, we're essential, we're making a paycheck, to give back quietly in their own way. We can all change lives within our community. When I look back a year from now, I'm going to reflect on those 2,700 employees and also the PenFed Foundation helping those who needed it on rainy days.
That's beautiful. It's funny, Jill and I, both of us feel very fortunate that we still have paychecks coming in too. And so it's that feeling, we were just talking about it over the weekend, about like what more we can do to the people that their lives have been disrupted for, and maybe for a few months, right? Like, so it's
I tell my staff and my teams, even we, you know, we own Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, PenFed Realty, one of our subsidiaries with over 2,000 agents around the country. Yeah. And what I shared with them is we can't help everybody, but we can each help someone or some charity. And so I want it done quietly. I tell them to go out in their own ways, but for those who much is given, much is required. And we're all proud as an industry we can step up and help others during these tough times.
Love it. I'd like to move on to the second part of the show, the leadership and the life hacks portion. First, I mean, you mentioned 6 years now at PenFed. What inspired you to take the gig as president and CEO?
Well, 6 years as CEO. I've been at PenFed for 19 years. Okay. February 1st, I celebrated 19 years in this amazing industry. And when I came out of the military, I was working for the Secretary of the Army. I wanted to go into a career where I can make a difference and give back. I've always been in sort of a career of service. I got involved with the military when I was young in eighth grade. We lost some eight service members in a failed a rescue operation in Iran. And from that point on in my life, I said, I'm going to dedicate myself to helping others and bringing them back safely. Studied hard, became a helicopter pilot, flew special ops, what I always wanted to do. And when I left the military, it was an opportunity to work for an industry that truly put others above self. If you look across our industry, 5,200 credit unions. Each one has, you know, the federally chartered credit unions have a volunteer board of directors. These are men and women who care about their field of membership, who want to make a difference to the men and women they work alongside. And I'm so proud of my board. And, you know, my chairman's been with us for 39 years, my vice chairman, 20 years plus. And, you know, I have so many, you know, dedicated career, you know, military and career civilians who really want to make a difference in the community and help our membership. And I see that across the industry. That was my decision, and to be given the honor and the opportunity to become the CEO, to really, it's humbling because it really has an 85-year history of helping others. I just want to continue that legacy.
So you mentioned 19 years at PenFed, past six as the CEO. Did the inspiration change at all once you were, you know, kind of the buck stopped with you these last 6 years?
It has. What it allowed me to do is allowed me to shape my vision. So for those who know me, I love this set, big, hairy, audacious goals. I took over, we had about just under 1.4 million members, and we had about 17 billion in assets. So I'm a growth CEO. But what that means is I try to surround myself with the best and the brightest. Anybody that works at PenFed, they can work at 10 other places. And I tell them, if they can't work elsewhere, I don't want them to work at PenFed, right? I surround myself with the absolute best I can find. And then it's my job and my senior leader's job and every manager's job is to make it a destination employer, to make that employee feel special, the right pay, the right benefits, the right office environment, the right culture. When you align those things and you make people feel really special, they give 110% to help our members. And that's what it's all about. It's helping our members do better financially.
So you mentioned your team. Is there something that your colleagues have heard you say so many times that they can finish your sentence?
Yeah, I walk in every day and I leave every day and I yell out very loudly, I love it here. Because I truly do. Where do you get paid to inspire others, to give others livelihood? We've hired 150 people the last 45 days at PenFed. When I took over 6 years ago, we had about 1,400 employees. Now with 2,700 employees, that's 1,300 additional jobs that their families are making it in Main Street America. I'm so proud of that as a CEO. When you can hire, inspire, and retain quality individuals who always give more of themselves than they ever ask in return, I love it here. That's what they hear me say very often.
That is good. I think I know the title of the podcast. So, you know, sometimes as a leader, this was a question I asked or added the second season of the podcast. You have to make that tough decision. you know, so it's kind of a twofold question. Is that something that you always had inside you, or was it something that you had to learn over time to, you know, make that question, even if it's a little unpopular at the time?
I've always learned to be a collaborative leader. So okay. At the end of the day, the CEO makes the final decision, but I surround myself with amazing minds from all backgrounds. I use the term, I want folks taller than me, shorter than me, heavier than me, skinnier than me, different financial backgrounds, different, you know, everything. I want a diverse group of leaders to give me their best thoughts on any given decision. I try to assimilate it. You're never going to have 100% of the facts. In an uncertain environment, the CEO and the senior leader needs to make a decision in a direction. But when you are willing to share that decision-making authority with others, and they truly have input into that decision, you find to have high-performing teams. And I've been very proud to have an amazing team at every level within PenFed, because I try to set a culture that I do listen. And the other thing I think is very important for any leader, you don't need to be a bully or to be authoritative to be an effective leader. Some of the best leaders, they come in all shapes and sizes. Some of the best leaders speak the quietest. What they look for is somebody that's competent. They lead them in the right direction. They make good decisions, but it's based on a team approach. And that's what I've been trying to bring to PenFed these last 6 years. The right folks, the right feedback, the right decisions. And so far, our remote model is working well.
That's fantastic. When you think back to earlier in your career, is there a mistake that you made, or maybe a mistake that you see young leaders make?
Yeah, I think the mistake I see young leaders make is they think they have to know it all. And I don't say that like the personality of being a know-it-all, but they always have to have like the last word, or it's like they're making the decision. I think effective leaders I've seen through my military career and through my financial career are leaders who have the trust and respect of those who are following them. That's truly what a leader is. They build trust and respect that others will follow. And when times are tough, you don't need to be bossy. You don't need to be authoritative. You need to be empathetic. And sometimes the strongest leaders are the ones that are the most caring. And the sense is, most people talk too much and listen too little. So what I would say is, at the junior level, don't lead through email or through text. That's important. You got to communicate. But be visible. Talk to folks. Listen. And when they know you're sincere, they'll give you their best thinking and they'll support your final decisions.
I heard this in the past couple of weeks and it stuck with me. And I quite honestly don't remember where I heard it. If I remember, I will source it in the show notes as well. But someone was talking about listening to understand, not listening to respond.
Absolutely. And
it just has resonated with me because sometimes I talk too much. So,
Rand, I have a saying that in any meeting, if you just listen, if you just watch the dynamics of a room, if you do most of the talking during a meeting, you leave that meeting thinking it was great, and the rest of the folks that attended thought it was terrible. If you do very little talking and really focus on active listening, you might think the meeting wasn't successful. Everybody else left the room because they felt it was the best meeting they've been at because their opinions were shared, listened to, heard, and acted upon.
That is absolutely true. Has there been a piece of advice or a life lesson that you received early in your life, maybe, that you just keep coming back to over and over?
Absolutely. My second week at PenFed, I had two female executives came into my office. They said, "We don't care what highfalutin academic tickets you have. You know, as a West Point Harvard guy, we don't care what you did in the military. You better take absolutely perfect care of the employees that work for you." And I was just a division head at this time as a chief administrative officer. If you don't take perfect care of the employees, you are not going to be successful here at PenFed. We'll make it that way. That got my attention real quick. It was almost like a kick in the gut, but I've never forgotten that. And these were two individuals that had been at PenFed, worked their way up from tellers up to executive vice presidents that were very well respected. And the reason they wanted me to hear from them firsthand, very clearly, without any sort of wavering. Your job is to take care of the employees. And when you do that well, they're going to take perfect care of the members. And I've never forgotten that lesson.
That's quite the welcome. It obviously stayed with you. So, you know, one of the things that I noticed in the first season of the show was how many people brought up mentors. You mentioned the previous CEO. I wanted to, you know, throw it out there to you. Have you had mentors, and what have you learned from them? How have they helped your career?
I have had mentors. My father, who passed away when I was a senior at West Point, still lives with me each and every day. Anyone that's lost a parent or a loved one has certain life lessons they take away. And my father was a Marine who served in combat in the Korean War with the 1st Marine Division. And he was the one that taught me best, always help others. When you help others and you truly care, you'll sleep well at night. And I try to create a culture that's built around kindness and respect. And that was really from my dad. My dad never had to raise his voice. He had done amazing things in combat. He was wounded with a Chinese grenade, was rehabilitated in Japan, went back to the front line. So he was a tough little guy, but absolutely never raised his voice during my entire childhood. Never heard him have to raise his voice and yell. He always won an argument through what I consider reason. And he says, you never have to train to be miserable. And so he was a great mentor of mine.
Oh, I'm sorry for your loss. It sounds like it was quite some time ago, but still, that's amazing that you still have him with you all the way through, right? So your dad, that's...
His other best advice I always live by is lift books, not weights. He always says, you get older in life, you want to lead from the mind, not by your body. And there's nothing wrong with bodybuilding. My son now likes to go to the gym and I go to the gym. But my father's philosophy was study hard, education matters. Yeah. He dropped out of high school to go fight for his country, came back, finished his GED. So to him, education matters. And at PenFit, we take professional development and education of all our employees very seriously. And I think it was his role model that helped as well. So that's one mentor I'd mentioned that's really shaped my thinking.
Yeah, it sounds like I can see why. What does a typical workday look like for you? And I think this question might have been more relevant maybe before we were all working from home and things like that. But the add-on, like, what's the perfect workday for you?
Perfect workday, it's really, there's a little bit of that what I consider familiar. So like every Tuesday for the last 19 years at PenFed, we have an executive team meeting. Prior to me becoming CEO and since becoming CEO, I get all my top executives as I come in. You know, our senior administrative executives are there and they welcome me and I yell out, I love it here. And then we go into a meeting and we spend time going around talking about the different divisions, you know, what our volumes look like, what our service levels look like, but more importantly, what collaboration needs to occur between finance, through consumer lending, through mortgage lending, through operations, through legal, through compliance. So there really is 3 or 4 hour meeting of what do we need to do to better coordinate? And then it's all about prioritizing. So what I think any good leader does in the credit union space, in the banking space, or in any business they're running is you need to be able to mass resources where it matters and what I call economy of force where it doesn't matter. So in other words, focus on what's important. And so as we go around, as the leaders of the firm, there's 9 of us, our executive vice president, we decide where to prioritize our resources. And that's really essential. You cannot be all things to all people. Sometimes I go to a conference and I see these slides. We're going to be number one in convenience. We're going to be number one in service. We're going to be number one in price. And you get none of it. Okay. So PenFed competes digitally and we compete on price and we focus. What do we need to do to run extremely lean? We don't want a lot of real estate. We don't want a lot of branches. We do 100 million transactions a month remotely. We want to make sure we're providing value and investing in our digital platform. I can add another branch, another $500,000, but that's 500,000 less resources to prioritize into my mobile app, which is my strategic advantage. So I would argue that my perfect day is surrounding myself with really smart leaders from all backgrounds, pushing their buttons to get them really up and energized to give me how they really feel, what we need to be doing to really make a difference. And then what I call it, breaking friction with bureaucracy. Too many times people say, oh, yeah, I'll get that done in 6 months, or oh, we can probably integrate that within the next 12 months. And I say, yeah, 12 days. Let's go. Here's what we're going to do. How do we? It's like writing a term paper, right? When you're in college, you might have 3 months to write it. You write it the last 2 days. That's the same with a lot of projects, right? If you focus, stop doing this other stuff, head down, let's get this done. This is going to be 80% of X on Memorial Day weekend or 90% of this on this. Let's focus on what matters where it matters and is where we can make the most impact.
So this is a complete scratch my own itch question. I am a firm believer that a lot of the times it's what you don't do or decide to not do that's really important. But one of the things I know that I struggled with early when we started CU Insight was this idea of almost getting married to an idea?
Say no to what's not material, and you would be surprised. Our productivity by working from home right now is up 20% across our consumer folks and my mortgage folks. And the reason is they're not going to meetings just to spend time in meetings. They're not driving 30 to 50 minutes back and forth to work, and they're not sitting around the water cooler to say, well, are we going to be off on on the 4th of July? I've already told them, yes, you're going to be off on 4th of July. Just make sure the members know to do the business with us prior so they can have the weekend off. I mean, communicate, communicate, stop doing what doesn't matter. That's my advice to anybody in business.
I absolutely love that. Thanks for letting me veer off my questions a little bit. So
name the book, Don't Be All Things to All People. If you want to be, you're going to fail miserably in all of them.
Just say no, right? before we move on to the last part of the show, if you have a free day, there's nothing on the calendar, what do you enjoy outside of credit unions? And you run a big organization. What does work-life integration look like to you?
At every level, you need a hobby. My hobby since I was 15 years old, my dad, talk about my mentor, threw out TVs when I was a young kid in high school and said, go out and live life. He says, what do you like to do? At the time, I liked aviation and aeronautics. I was building Bolsa airplanes. I became a private pilot, solo at 16. I've been flying since I was 17. I still try to fly in a little Cirrus. It's called an SR-22. It's a little four-seat piston aircraft. I try to fly around the local area, Maryland, D.C. I go down to West Virginia. As a Black Hawk pilot, as you know, there's nothing more beautiful than not having stop signs. I tell my general counsel, it's just so nice to be in the air and there's not like a red light every 12 miles or 12 feet, so it's really fun.
My business partner is a pilot too, and he seems to get some peace from that as well, I think. So the last part of the show, I want to be respectful of your time. They're the rapid fire questions. The questions are rapid. Your answers don't have to be.
Okay.
What were you like in high school? You mentioned earlier that it sounds like at eighth grade, you kind of knew the direction you wanted to go. But do you remember the first time you got in any trouble?
I worked a lot of jobs. So my trouble would be if I got late. I literally worked 10 jobs in high school because I like flying, and flying was always expensive. So I would leave work. I'd leave school at 2 o'clock. I'd ride my little moped. I worked at a plastic factory. I'd press a button. The mold would close. It would inject plastic molding. A minute later, a light would come on. I'd press another button. The mold would open, and I'd take the plastic part and put it in a box. That's when I learned that's not what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
It's so funny you say that. I was just talking to a friend of mine up in Michigan, and he was talking about his nephew who happens to be in high school and saying that he hadn't had a job yet. And both of us had worked all through high school, all through college. And he was like, those jobs made me realize why I needed college. So, because I didn't want to do it ever again. So it's like, he thought his nephew should get a job.
But I started when I leave that place at 4 o'clock, I go over to a Citibank and I was a teller. And okay. I spent, 2 hours, and then I go to an A&P, which is Atlantic and Pacific food store, and I would be a cashier for 3 hours. And then on weekends, I cut 10 grasses and I umpired and I had a few other odd jobs. But it really taught me about people and giving 110% and being able to what I call parallel process to go from one task to another to another. And that's what being a leader is at any level. Whether you're a manager, you might be dealing with a personnel issue with COVID-19, and then you're dealing with volume issue, and then you're dealing with an IT issue, then you're dealing with a facility or a space issue. You got to be able to be agile in how you run your life. And that high school experience allowed me to be very agile, where I can go from one meeting to another and focus. Immediately switch from a facility discussion on our 2025 facility footprint to, what we're doing right now in a certain branch to make sure we protect our employees. And I think that's at every level, having that flexibility.
I ask everyone on the show what they wanted to be when you grew up. And to you, it sounds like you knew you wanted to fly all along.
Fly and be in finance. If you remember the 80s, Wall Street was just a roaring Wall Street. You can throw a dart at a stock and it was going up literally since, my high school years, 80 to 84. And I've always wanted to be in finance because through finance, you can help others. And through the credit union industry, when you're helping fund loans, you're providing livelihood. And I'm very proud of that.
That's good stuff. Do you have any daily routines that if you don't do, your day just feels off?
If I don't say I love it here, I feel like I'm just not saying it right. But no, I like being surrounded with people. That's why I still go to the office several days a week. I have a few executives. We socially distance within the team rooms. And then we blue jeans in is our sort of our web platform to bring in other executives. But I like being around people. I get energy around people because it's their input, it's their thoughts, it's their vision of the future that sort of I call pure oxygen, pure combustion. When good ideas come together and then I can sort of break that friction with bureaucracy and prioritize it. Yep, that's brilliant. Let's go. Here's what we're going to do. Here's where I want to move X amount of marketing dollars or X facility dollars, and we can get things done. I would feel terrible if I had to just work remotely without seeing their faces and that energy when you get, you know, just people. When people like to work together, that's why people do sports. People like being around people. So I think, you know, some people do like working from home because it eliminates the commute. But as we start opening back up in phases, there's a real bond, a real culture that's had around kindness and respect face to face. And I don't think that's ever going to go away in America.
Yeah. Salesforce recently put out a study and it found that people enjoy the option of working from home, but they still want someplace to go to. So they'd like a kind of a quasi, you know what I mean, mixture of both of them. So
that's why you see a lot of consultants that run their own business. They'll go to a Starbucks or they'll actually rent office space where they're interacting with other people. And that's why Starbucks has been so successful. The coffee's great. Don't get me wrong. But it's that connectivity of being around other folks. Like when I was in college and business school and I'd walk over to undergrad at Harvard Yard and you get all these smart kids. Just the energy, listening to their conversation. I go back and I study twice as hard because of the energy around others. When I go to a gym, you go downstairs, work out on your treadmill, it's boring. You might do 30, 40 minutes. You go to the gym and you see these people just putting you to shame. You try to do an hour, 70 minutes. So that's the feeling I get being around others, especially high-powered individuals who really have a shared vision of it, helping our members do well.
That's good. The random question, what's the best album of all time? You just mentioned the 80s, that album.
Rush.
There you go.
I just play it loud. I listen to it every morning when I wake up, and I just play it loud.
Is that the commute song, or just when you get out of bed?
Absolutely, right? When I first minute on the treadmill, that's on for about the first 4 minutes, and it gets my heart going.
I love it. I'm a reader. Jill and I have a stack of books around our house that, you know, you mentioned the General McChrystal one earlier today, and that happens to be in the stack. Is there a book that you've either gifted others or that you just think everybody should read?
Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. Truly the story of capitalism, 1939. This amazing writer came to America, left Russia, and talked about what it meant in America with the rational decision-making, mind versus mind. Individuals who are rewarded through their efforts. I think in society today, Ayn Rand is a great role model to read and use it as an additional data point. What capitalism, what Americanism stands for, and what hard work means.
As you've gotten older, what has become more important to you? And my favorite part of this question, what's become less important?
What's become more important? It is important to take time to recharge. So eating healthier is much more important. There were days when I was a Black Hawk helicopter pilot, I could eat that meatball sub, drink a Coke, and have that chocolate dessert, still fly my mission, run a 2-mile PT test, and accomplish the day. Okay, in my 50s, let's just say a meatball sub is once every 6 months, okay? Yeah. Not my daily lunch table. So eating healthier has definitely become more important. And finding time to mentally come away from work. A lot of roles in work at every level. You can stay engaged 24 hours a day, 7 days a week through technology. I used to find it very hard to totally step back. But when you surround yourself with really good leaders, you need to take the time to entrust them to make decisions in your absence and really find whether it's a 3-day weekend or you take a consecutive week of leave to let them make the decisions. Do not be checking in with them. So the one thing I found not to do is really to find time throughout the year to take that time off to mentally recharge. I think that's very important for everybody throughout the firm and throughout all firms.
I agree with you. There's a question that I didn't send you. When you hear the word success, who is the first person that comes to mind?
It's funny. I was thinking Mother Teresa because the number of people she inspired and helped. Anybody who helps others, who gives more of themselves than they ask in return, to me, that's a successful individual. And I see it throughout society. There are so many folks with what I call big hearts, big brains, and big hearts. Financial success is nothing in life. You want to have, you know, money in reserve. You want to make money. Don't get me wrong. That's capitalism. To me, success is individuals who really help inspire others to do better.
That's a perfect answer and a great way to wrap up. James, thank you so much for taking the time today and sharing your story and being on the show. My last question for you is, do you have any final asks of our listeners or final thoughts you'd like to share?
Many hands make the load light. People helping people. If whether you're a teller, whether you're in finance, whether you're in marketing, every one of you are contributing to helping the economy recover and help others do better. So take time to listen and be proud that you're part of an industry that is like no others. The credit union industry, it's one of a kind. Let's never forget, it's about people helping people.
Awesome. We will link to everything we talked about today in the show notes. If people have additional questions of you, you have a favorite form of contact, LinkedIn, the Twitter machine, email?
I only do LinkedIn. So I got, thousands of followers that send me stuff on LinkedIn. I got 2 million members. They reach out to me, good things and bad things, which I'm very proud of. Please reach out to me via LinkedIn, or you're welcome to share my email. The one thing I've always done is credit union industry, we can triple in size. We can all triple in size, and we're still smaller than Citibank alone, right? So always willing to help others, to give my thinking. I'm just one data point, but I'm proud of this industry. I like sharing my thoughts, good, bad, or indifferent. And, I think collective wisdom, when people share ideas, we can find the best way forward as individuals and as companies. So I'm always willing to help. So please share my email with your listeners as well.
I will put all that in the show notes. Thank you again, James. Stay healthy, my friend, and I hope you have an amazing day.
Randy, be safe to you and to all your listeners. Thank you for the honor.
Before we go, I have to just pass along a huge thank you to all of you for listening. We could not do this without you. So we greatly appreciate you because we are having a blast. Once again, I would like to thank James for taking the time out of his extremely busy schedule to have this conversation with me for all of you. And a big thank you to our sponsors at PSCU. Our friends at PSCU have been longtime partners and supporters of CU Insight. So please make sure to click on their link in the show notes and give them some love. See everything they have going on to help the credit union community, not only through these interesting times we're living in, but always. So one more thing. We're on all the podcast players out there. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. You choose. We're there. We would appreciate if you would subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating, maybe. Maybe even a review on the old Apple podcast machines. It does help with the visibility of the show. If you, by chance, don't think we're worth the 5 stars, just forget I asked. And you can send me an email and find me on Twitter and let me know what we can improve. And then don't forget about the CU Insight Experience podcast book list. If you need a little extra stimulation for the mind, as James' father had told him, build the mind. We've got you covered. Get your next book recommendation from the guests on our show. Thank you all again for listening. Have a great day and stay healthy, friends.